Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James.
Hello.
Before we get started, we want to get you to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. A couple weeks ago, we did a podcast with Emily commemorating the 10th anniversary of the greatest film ever made, Mean Girls. And earlier this week, we put out a podcast about Boogie Nights, Paul Thomas Anderson's second movie. So yeah, check those out. I wrote a thing about the movies Frank and Breadcrumb Trail over at songsandcigarettes.com. And follow us on Twitter at the MacGuffin Man, all one word, no underscores, nothing like that. Yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes and listen to the theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right, James.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Neighbors, the new Seth Rogen joint.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
We both just saw it.
We did. You saw it a bit later than anticipated. I want to hear the story of you getting locked out of the movie theater.
I wish I had an explanation. I checked the movie times for the Silver City in Newmarket where I live.
Yeah.
And I drove there like 20 minutes before the show started and all the doors were locked. And there's a bunch of equally confused people outside, and I still don't have an explanation for this.
That's really funny. It's not like it was a holiday or anything either.
No, and I checked their times on their website and then on the app while I was outside and called the phone number of the building and could not get a human being to respond. And
today, did you write them a strongly worded letter?
No, okay. I'm still confused. I lost. I don't even know how to write anymore. My brain's just...
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of like when I used to work at a video store. When we'd be open on holidays, there was a 24-hour grocery store right next to us, and we'd just go stand outside and watch people be confused by the closed grocery store. And, like, we would do this for hours. It was wonderful.
So mean.
Yeah, so I've seen the facial expression you've made before, and I fucking love it. But yeah, today you saw the film. I succeeded at getting into my unlocked theater last night, and I saw it yesterday. Thoughts on the movie?
I like Zac Efron a lot.
You would like Zac Efron.
I thought he was good at this.
He was very funny in this movie.
Yeah. What did you think of the movie?
I liked it quite a bit. I don't think it's like upper tier Rogan, but I got what I needed out of it, and I thought it was while choppy, I thought it was pretty funny, and I thought Rose Byrne was hilarious. Like, she was killing me a lot. And
yeah,
like, I feel like the way people talked about her in Bridesmaids is kind of how I feel about her in this movie. Like, I thought she was super funny. And
sorry,
no, it's fine.
It's a big drum barrel full of weed over here.
Gonna hotbox the whole house for this podcast.
Yeah.
I thought she was great, and I mean, Seth Rogen, we know what we're gonna get with him, and he was wonderful as well, you know. And Baby Franco, I liked Baby Franco a lot in 21 Jump Street, and I liked him in this.
Yeah this movie has so many people I like, and even if they had small roles in this movie and didn't do much, that was very funny. It was still good to see them again.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we got some very quick cameos out of the way with the history of Delta Psi.
Yeah, exactly. Like, cameos that did not... Like, they barely benefited from having these people play these roles. Like, the Lonely Island guys and Workaholics and then Jake Johnson, you know.
Yeah. Again, very little to do, but just it made me happy to see them there.
Yeah, for sure. It's just nice to see those guys.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of want to talk about Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg as producers, because they've kind of built this kind of place for Seth Rogen in Hollywood that I find really interesting, and this movie really plays into that. They weren't credited writers or they didn't direct this movie either. The only movie they've directed is This Is the End. But they did produce it, and generally, movies that they co-produce, it's pretty well known that they have a lot of input on the script. Like, I believe the original script of this movie was Rogan and his friends, not Rogan and his wife fighting against the Delta Psi,
yeah.
which is a big change and an interesting change, and really plays into to what you know, how we kind of see Seth Rogen, because Seth Rogen as a famous person starts to exist in 2007 with Knocked Up, basically. The first hit movie that he headlines. And that was a movie all about growing up. And then we got, you know, movie after movie, all those Apatow movies that he was a part of that are basically about friendship. And starting with 50-50, you kind of get to see a bit of growth. And 50-50, when people, if I was ever asked the question, like, what movie best encapsulates how people of your generation feel about, like, sad things, I will point them to 50-50, because I feel like it's kind of the best example of how our generation deals with their emotions. And I think This Is the End was a really interesting movie as well about friends growing apart, and in a way that was a bit more interesting than the movies that have come before it. It was also just a really funny comedy. And Neighbors is quite obviously about accepting part of your life is over. And I find it really interesting that Seth Rogen is now being marketed as a parent. Like, he's on the poster for this movie in a Baby Bjorn. And I think that's really cool. And that's kind of the whole crux of this movie, is about Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne accepting that they're adults with a kid. You know, their kid's, what, like 9 months old or something like that? I don't know. Like, I just find it really interesting that, one, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are able to make so many consistently very funny movies that I like a lot. I love This Is the End, and I like 50-50 even more. Neighbors is probably my least favorite of those three, but it's really interesting, and I find it interesting that our generation has such a figurehead for growing up and emotions, and that figurehead exists in R-rated comedies, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think about Seth Rogen in general?
Well, is it that much different than his role in Knocked Up, which was, you know, preparing to be a dad? Like, it's... This is that same character, like, you know, a year later, essentially, is it not?
Yeah, it kind of is. But I mean, we're not shown him accepting having a kid. We see him in Knocked Up accepting having a kid, whereas we see him have the kid in this movie. You know, like, yeah, it's certainly a continuation of that character, but that's kind of what I'm talking about, in that he's sort of filling different versions of the same role in a way that's interesting. You know, like, we see him deal with the fact that he's going to be a father and he has to grow up. And now he's kind of realizing, like, the details of what that means, you know?
Yeah, because it's not so much that this movie is, you know, these old people who are set in their ways versus these young people who still want to party. Both of them, not just Seth's character, Mac, but Kelly, Rose Byrne's character, they kind of haven't accepted it at the start of this movie. I mean, they're bad parents. They're about to bring their kids to their baby to a rave if they didn't fall asleep trying to do it from just being overworked parents.
Yeah, and a rave that is apparently good enough that Prince might show up. So definitely not a baby-proof rave.
Yeah. but that's what I mean. It's there's still so much growth in this movie for those two characters. It's not just young versus old. There's still kind of a young versus old struggle within our main couple here, where only near the end of the movie do they really say, and, you know, very explicitly say, part of our lives is over and it's gone for good. And, you know, the first time they go over there to try to say, you know, maybe do you mind keeping it down, essentially, the many ways we've learned there is to say maybe keep it down.
Yeah.
You know, they try to look young and they try to fit in to, you know, get on their side and not seem lame, but they still very much see themselves as part of that crowd. Mm-hmm. And it's part of this movie is accepting, you know, just look at the party invitations they get to that bookend this movie. The first one, they say, oh my God, it's a rave. Prince is going to be there. It's going to be so much fun. Let's just bring the baby. Let's go and we can do that. And then they get invited to, you know, Burning Man at the end, and they're just content not to go.
Yeah.
And it's just the growth that they've gone through in the you know, throughout the movie, that you know, he says this is the party that I want to be at. It's not about not being able to get into that first party anymore. It's about accepting that, you know, you have something better and you don't even want to get into it anymore.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we get kind of the same thing from a different angle with Teddy and Pete by the end of the movie, which was something I found really interesting and didn't totally expect from the movie.
I wouldn't have guessed that. I mean, I know this isn't an Apatow movie, but this is kind of someone who clearly has been inspired by those movies or wants to make movies similar to that.
Seth
Rogen at all, it's always just going to come with that territory.
Exactly. And Seth Rogen has always played like a really important part in the crafting of the Apatow image. He's a producer on The 40-Year-Old Virgin. He was a writer on Undeclared, and Freaks and Geeks was like his first real foray into acting. But that wasn't that always gets credited as like an Apatow show, but that's equal parts Paul Feig and Judd Apatow, you know? And Seth Rogen has had a big hand in crafting the Apatow brand, at least up until Funny People. And he's kind of like, you know, Apatow B, you know?
Yeah. And so in all those kinds of movies, Apatow and the ones that are kind of closely associated with that, we very often get a male friendship story that involves a lot of drinking and partying and, you know, sex jokes and things like that, but always has this kind of backbone about a real emotional arc. Like, you know, you can see it very clearly in This Is the End for all the insane, goofy, silly, disgusting stuff that happens in that movie. There is a very clear line throughout it of this emotional center between these two male characters that, you know, either change or realize that they've changed by the end of the movie. And as I was saying, we get kind of the growth with this couple in that movie who come to accept that, you know, they're not that young anymore and they have things that can replace the things they used to care about when they were young. And now they're happy, you know, just staying home and being good parents. And we get something similar with Teddy and Pete, where it becomes quite clear that Teddy can't live the way he has been living for the last 4 years forever.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, Pete very clearly points out, you know, your big problem with this couple next door is that they remind you of your future. And it's not that you hate them so much. You really hate the idea that one day you're going to become a little bit more like them and eventually completely like them.
Yeah, for sure. And I started to say it, but that was the thing I didn't expect about this movie. And I kind of just assumed that the people from Delta Psi would just kind of be caricatures. Like, they would come into the movie being hated and never be established as people, and then they would end the movie being hated and never established as people.
Yeah,
and
like they got defeated and they're just kind of an element, not a character.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, they got, you know, a humanizing kind of introduction. They weren't dicks when they meet Mac and Kelly, and and at the
they
end
love Stella.
And at the end we get kind of a check-in. You know, we don't get a guarantee that they're going to be okay, but the idea that they at least know what they have to do. Teddy specifically, like, Pete was always a bit ahead of Teddy, but yeah. And it's kind of interesting that Abercrombie and Fitch scene, which I found very funny. I like Abercrombie model jokes in general, and then adding adding Seth Rogen into it was great. That he's Abercrombie, I'm Fitch line killed me. yeah. But
relaxed fit.
Yeah, and that sort of scene that shows them able to sort of occupy the same space with each other, but do so in different ways. And it's kind of like a very loose metaphor for where they are in their lives, right? Like, Seth Rogen's character Mac can still be silly and ridiculous, but he's going to go home to his wife and kid, you know? And Teddy can use that, the thing that he knows he has, to sort of end up helping him progress through his life, like getting paid while going to school still.
Yeah, exactly. He's still going to night school, and you can see he's kind of getting out of his old lifestyle, I guess.
Well, yeah, he's at least making money for having his shirt off, as opposed to just partying and spending money
yeah,
while having his shirt off.
Speaking of visual metaphors, their dildo fight near the climax of the scene.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny when you kind of get that moment where, you know, Seth Rogen has the, like, a big floppy dong weapon, and Teddy's just happened to grab a small one. But, you know, to read into something so kind of silly and ridiculous, that's, you know, Seth being more, or Mac, I guess, being more of a man at this point. And he ends up being victorious, and he's the one who, you know, it does those manly things that aren't just, you know, winning beer pong and fucking sorority chicks. It's things like going to work in the morning and taking care of your daughter and, you know, making sure, like, taking care of your house and all those things. And he's got kind of the real, the real masculinity things on his side, whereas Teddy's got kind of the more superficial ones. And then we see that shown very clearly with differing sized dildos. And, you know, it's such a good, that really, I just find that really sums up the kind of the humor that we were talking about before with Apatow and Rogan and kind of that whole little troupe there, because it's a funny scene and it's a big goofy visual metaphor, but it's, you know, grounded in something real and grounded in this, real character arc and this plot line that has to do with, you know, emotionally grounded things like, you know, growing up and being responsible. And, I just thought that was something that was a funny laugh right away. And then, thematically lines up with so much of the way that those guys have made their career and something that pervades through all their movies.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you like the job fair scene?
Like all of their lines and stuff?
Yeah, there's a couple of good things about that. I thought him talking the AT&T scene was kind of funny and, you know, real again, like I've just been talking about. But yeah, the back and forth, all the Mario and Luigi over Thelma and Louise and sports over genital awards. Wait, no, not that one. Yeah. I thought that was fun.
And the, when they do a callback to it later, when Teddy and Pete are fighting, like talking about how they were just making jokes to cover up their emotions, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, any scene that's just a line of jokes, you know, like that, there's going to be some winners and some losers. But
yeah,
it was a good time.
Yeah, I just the very kind of closing shot of that scene where he just takes out the lollipop and puts it in his mouth and calls something lame. It backs up so many of the things we've been discussing. It's him thinking he's really cool and he's doing something so infantile as sucking on a lollipop and calling something lame. Like he really kind of sees himself as above all of this. And it's, you know, how you're going to make money in 2 months or whenever the school's done and things like that. I thought that was a well done scene too.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's even kind of a way to tie that into Zac Efron's career. Like he's kind of in the past few years. He hasn't been in a lot of good movies, but he's at least tried to balance heartthrob type stuff. Like, I can't remember what that movie he was in earlier this year with Michael B. Jordan was called, but That Awkward Moment, like these kind of movies where he's still kind of a heartthrob and they're just there to appease the people that were fans of him in High School Musical and the young girls that will still go see a movie just because he's good looking. But he's also tried to balance these things out with stuff like The Paperboy, which was a garbage movie, but he clearly decided he wanted to be in because it was from the director of Precious. He was coming off Precious at the time. And I think that's kind of where Zac Efron is in his career, is kind of trying to figure out a way to keep his career going past just his abs, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, whether or not he's succeeding, I mean, Neighbors is certainly going to help. It's the first good movie he's been good in, so...
And it's making a lot of money.
Oh, it's making a shit ton of money.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Not that I thought Spider-Man 2 should be number one forever, but I was surprised to kick it out like so strongly.
Yeah, part of the thing with Spider-Man 2 is that it's so bad. Like, didn't it drop like 70% from its opening weekend?
Oh, I didn't hear that number, but...
That's
terrible.
That's word of mouth up and down. You know, like, there's no other excuse for that. And did you see Spider-Man 2? I know you said you were going to, but I can't remember if you did.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, it was a piece of shit, right?
Mostly yes.
Exception being the Charlie Chaplin scene, of course, which was tremendous.
Of course, I love that. Yeah. Quick Spider-Man 2 tangent.
Yeah, that's fine.
I have said that Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 are not good, but this series has brought us the best couple in superhero movies history.
Yeah, I think that, well, I didn't like their stuff in Spider-Man 2, but I agree with that statement in Spider-Man 1.
Yeah.
I found the stuff in 2 so not engaging.
Okay.
But yeah, certainly, I mean, we did a podcast on The Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, and I think that was basically what we talked about for 80% of the time, was how much we enjoy Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone.
Yeah.
And Garfield is a great Spider-Man. But anyways, getting back to...
And Garfield is a good frat boy, too.
Yeah. I loved his scene with Hannibal, where Hannibal's like, do some cat stuff.
And Garf just does not understand it at all, but goes for it anyway.
Oh, God, that was so funny. And
I'm so glad Gerard Carmichael was good.
Yeah, and like I've seen him do stand-up and haven't enjoyed it that much, but he was really enjoyable in this movie.
He's got a good voice. You like voices. I think he is, I could listen to that guy talk forever.
Yeah, and he's got like a face that's you know, he can easily make funny faces, you know. There's just something about his eyes, I think, that are big and expressive that really lends itself to comedy, you know.
Yeah. And this movie has so many people, comedians I know from other things, and just again, a lot of them don't even get a chance to do anything funny.
Yeah.
But that speaking of that, their boss, that opening scene when they talk about working on the joint file,
yeah,
just gets so repetitive.
Yeah.
And so
for the THC corporation or whatever.
Yeah, we're in the weeds.
Yeah. How did you feel about Jimmy? How did you feel about Jimmy in the movie? Because I feel like you probably haven't seen him in anything before, right?
Ike Barinholtz?
Yeah. What's he in that, you know?
He's in The League.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains it.
Yeah.
Because he's in The Mindy Project. I fucking hate him in The Mindy Project.
Yeah.
He's the reason I stopped watching that show.
I've seen him a little bit in that. I don't really watch that show, but just from what I've seen when other people are watching it. Mm. And he's found it down in Mad TV.
Oh, okay, cool. Oh, yeah, he was on Mad TV.
Yeah. I think he's really funny.
He had his moments in this, and I was like, oh, okay, he's not all terrible. But
which scene?
The Hootie Who. When the cops are coming. And then, like, that, the Outkast song they're referencing is like a 1998 album cut called Slump. And then they just rap like a good portion of it. That made me really happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's a lot of really funny segments in this movie. And just,
Well, like Barinholtz, one, he gets a lot of his stuff in The League is improvised, and it's very funny. So he gets improv points, which goes a long way with me.
Gotcha.
But two, he's got some flack over his use of the N-word in his Barack Obama impression.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That scene of all the celebrities calling in, I thought was very funny, too.
Yeah, it was. I forget who the other impressions. Oh, Anne Hathaway was a funny.
Yeah, that was great.
I was kind of expecting the radio host to cut her off and be like, nobody likes you, Anne Hathaway, just because that would really play into how people talk about Anne Hathaway. But,
certainly would.
Yeah. But yeah, good movie.
But there's a Franco in this movie, so they can't be mean to Hathaway. That family's still apologizing to her for the Oscars.
Yeah, exactly, and will be forever.
That's right.
I mean, just going back to the Seth Rogen as an auteur of sorts, he's kind of in his public persona recently kind of been real adult, and it's been fascinating to me, like, just even just him on Twitter, I mean, making fun of Shia LaBeouf is something he probably always would have done, but talking shit about Justin Bieber I've found kind of funny, for him being like kind of a dick to him. I found that pretty interesting, and a Senate hearing about Alzheimer's was possibly like the most adult and most Seth Rogen-iest thing ever. Like, did you watch that video?
Only a bit of it.
Okay, well, I mean, he starts off by, like, it's a funny speech, like the jokes are funny, and but by the end it's like this really heartfelt thing about his wife's mother who's battling Alzheimer's, and his whole reaction to basically speaking to all but I think two empty seats has been very, I don't know, it's been very adult in a way that I don't think anybody would have anticipated after seeing Knocked Up, or, you know, the way he was in interviews in 2007, you know? And I don't know. I just find it really interesting that, he's so okay with growing up and so okay with building a career about where he is at his life growing up. Like he was on the Daily Show last week, and Jon Stewart assumed he had a kid, and he like asks him how old his kid is now, and Seth Rogen does not have a child, and I thought that was really funny and really fits in with where this movie is. And like he's been married for like 3 years now, I think, and between, you know, his public image and his age in this movie, like if he doesn't have a kid in 2 years, I'd be shocked, you know. And I feel like just the way that his career has been going, it's pretty easy to predict his personal life by following the movies that he makes, you know.
Yeah, but his whole career he's been just a very kind of personal writer and actor, like as goofy as a lot of his stuff is, so much of it is based on real experience and based on recent experiences and based on things, you know, that people our age or around our age go through. And so I think it makes so much sense that he's maintained that honesty up until this point and is making movies about the real things you deal with at whatever stage of his life he's in. And I think it's going to be like that until he, you know, dies or stops making movies.
Yeah.
And that's a... one of the best things I could say about a performer, honestly, like that they have that, that they're very funny and they can carry that while, you know, doing something real.
Yeah. And it's great. I suppose it's just a real perception versus reality thing. Like people that just see the ads for Seth Rogen movies, just kind of have a different feeling for Seth Rogen than people that actually see the movies. And I suppose that's true with most people, but, I mean, what you're saying about him being a very personal filmmaker, it's really interesting and cool, and I think he's very unique that way, just because of the space he operates within, you know? And, it's really interesting, and I think The Interview is his next movie, which sounds bananas, and I'm really curious to see that movie.
But, do you think he's going to get into more directing?
Yes.
That just seems logical, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, This Is the End was the first movie he directed, and then him and Evan Goldberg are doing The Interview, and then I don't know if they're directing Sausage Party or that whatever that animated movie's called, but I think they wrote it, at least. I think... because his movies are pretty easy to make on a low budget, so he'll probably always be able to be a lead actor. I think he would be totally fine with just being a director at some point, I think. Like with Evan Goldberg, you know?
Yeah. Well, they said a lot of people, including him and Zac Efron, took pay cuts to keep this budget down.
Yeah. Well, when I saw the budget was something like $18 million. When I saw that, I was really surprised. And that, I suppose that makes sense.
There you go. So more Seth to come, we hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely after all the money this movie made.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Neighbors 2 when Stella gets in on the Batman impersonations and does her best Ben Affleck.
Oh, wait. We didn't mention that one 420 joke.
No. See, I think there's a real difference between how I felt about that joke and how other people felt about that joke. Because, like, immediately I was like, how many digits? Oh, 3, 420. Okay, we did it.
Yeah, it didn't make me smile at all. I just started, like, not out of disappointment, but just started, I just hung my head and started shaking it and just waiting for them to figure it out along with everyone else in my theater.
Yeah, the way that joke was built up was for the people that don't constantly make 420 jokes with their best friend and / podcast buddy.
Yeah.
And I like the early shout out to 69 as well. That made me happy.
the Batman stuff was so good.
Oh, the Batman stuff was great. And when they're in the middle of their fight and they're doing their Batmans, that was one of my favorite parts for sure. Like the beer off the trampoline and then the trampoline into the fan. Like that whole sequence was so funny.
That was fun. There's a lot of good laughs in there. And I thought when Teddy brought over the walkie-talkies with the bow on it, it was actually like a surprisingly effective moment.
Definitely. Zac Efron had lots of really nice moments like that, like for that convey different things, like when he just sort of appears and it's kind of like a horror movie scare later on in the movie. It's like, oh my god, Teddy's here. And I thought that was really funny, and he looks like he's about to murder somebody. There was just a lot of really small moments in this movie that were really great. And, I mean, the two separate Seven references made me really happy. Or, sorry, the one repeated Seven reference. Delta Psi has the upper hand.
Yeah.
Obviously made me super happy.
Of course it would.
Thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Man. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinman.com, and follow us on Twitter. Yeah, thanks for listening.
for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.